the bottom. Can't hold me down, hold me down. I'm rising up, up from the ground. From the bottom. Can't hold me down, hold me down, hold me down. All my woes begin to howl. Wake me up, the time is now. Can you hear the drumming?
Welcome to the Choose the Power Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm your host, VJR Nathan. And with us today, our guest is Crystal Wolf. Ms. Wolf attended college at Purdue University and was in the SUNY college system in upstate New York. Ms. Wolf has been published in newspapers across the country and has won local literary awards in the community she's from in Indiana. She currently lives in New York City, where she has done freelance reporting for newspapers. She raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for nonprofits such as the ASPCA and NRDC, as well as political organizations such as the ACLU and Amnesty International. Ms. Wolf has put her time and money in serving the homeless by founding her own nonprofit, Catering for the Homeless, to feed the homeless and hungry with food going to waste from catering companies, schools, and restaurants, feeding thousands of homeless every month in Queens, Brooklyn, Manhattan, and the Bronx. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So why don't we start off the conversation with your book and Our Invisible Neighbors and your interest in catering for the homeless. How did Catering for the Homeless start? How did that organization start? And tell us a little bit about that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was a journey, that's for sure. So I knew even as a child, which most people know, that there's enough food going to waste that no one needs to go hungry. As a reporter, I'd been feeding the homeless when starting in Los Angeles. When I lived there, I fed the homeless once a week. I would take off, and I worked with the church, and they had a...
like a soup kitchen?
Yes, a soup kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah. Kitchen.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, for quite a while. But I really wanted to do more because coming to New York City, the homelessness was everywhere. And it just, for me... I couldn't look away. Like, I feel like a lot of people just turned their head, but I didn't want to look away. I wanted to do something about it because it was an epidemic. You know, it's an epidemic throughout the country and the world. So then when I've had several jobs in New York City, you know, because it's the rent prices are so high, which is a leading cause of homelessness. So I had multiple jobs, and one of the jobs that I wound up getting was in catering. So on my first catering job, there was a lot of food excess, and we were just throwing it away. And I said to the manager, you know, why can't we give this to the homeless? And he was like, oh, you know, well, we're afraid of getting sued. Mm. I said, well, what about, like, if churches and other nonprofits picked up the food, you guys wouldn't be liable? He's like, yeah, well, I guess that's true, but who's going to do all that work?
Yeah.
So I kind of... And I felt led to do this work. Now, that took a while because I'd never done websites before. So this was the first website I designed. Now I've designed 6 websites. But www.cateringforthehomeless.com is the first website I built. And that took a year to be able to have the courage to do that. And then also I was prompted to speak at a public meeting in my community at the community board 5 because there was protests going on at the Maspeth Holiday Inn Express for the homeless that were going to be coming into the hotel. So before I had even come to New York, I had decided that if I ever was at, you know, in a community that was protesting the homeless or the homeless coming in, that I was going to stand up and say something, because I felt, for me, that was upsetting to see these protests. So I wound up going to the community board and speaking out as a voice for the homeless. And then I wound up getting to know that a lot of the people that were protesting were not protesting the homeless. They were protesting the way that the homeless were being served or not served in these shelters. And I wound up becoming friends with them, and they've been very supportive and everything. But I've continued to speak out at these meetings because there's so many misperceptions. Like in the book, I talk about myths of homelessness that people are just really wrong about their perceptions, like homeless or criminals and things like that, which really, you know, homeless are more likely to be the victim of a violent crime than to commit a violent crime, things like that. So and property values, that's a big concern in Queens. And actually homeless cause property values to go up when they're housed, because when they're out on the streets, that deters people from coming into the community. So things like that. And then with catering for the homeless, so at the same time I started speaking out, that kind of prompted me to start to really do the website, which I knew I needed, you know, to start the nonprofit. And that began the journey. And since that time, that was about 2 years ago, I've now provided 25,000 meals for the homeless throughout New York City and poor by utilizing this food excess. And that's just going to be a growing endeavor. So,
yeah, it seems like it was a journey to first understand or first educate yourself on the cause of homelessness that you write about in the book.
Yeah.
And then to educate yourself in how to create this nonprofit, for the homeless, and then implement it both in the website and also in reality to, you know, coordinate all these different catering catering jobs to get their excess food to donate. So tell us a little bit about, in the book you talk about the causes of homelessness.
Yes.
So why don't we talk against the nitty-gritty of, like, what are some of the causes of homelessness?
Okay, well, this is a misperception or something that most people don't know. Domestic violence is one of the leading causes of homelessness. Mm. And the majority of homeless in New York City are families and children. 70% of the homeless in New York City are families. So domestic violence causes women and children to have to flee their homes. And unfortunately, there's not enough laws in place that protect the women. So they're forced to flee. And they experience, you know, a lot of hardship in the shelter system. So then also poverty is a leading cause, you know, throughout the country and worldwide. Eviction has been a leading cause of homelessness, particularly in places like New York City where the rents are so high. But there is a new law that was passed a year ago for right to counsel. So not everybody knows, but when there's a lawsuit in regards to a landlord and tenant, the landlord has the right to counsel, right to representation. And throughout the rest of the country, the tenants do not have a right to an attorney. But now, with this new law, they do. And in 1 year, eviction homelessness has gone down 37%. So there's also affordable housing is an issue. Gentrification is an issue. Mental health can be an issue, addiction, also medical bills. The medical health system is really, America probably has one of the worst medical in the world. So that's a problem. Natural disasters. So for instance, in Far Rockaways, with the last hurricane, there's in 2011, there's still people homeless in the Far Rockaways from that natural disaster. So that is a cause of homelessness. So that's just a few of them that I think a lot of those pertain to this area as well.
Yeah it seems like, you know, just in anecdotal and things that people I talk to, they seem to overemphasize the role that drug abuse and mental illness play in homelessness, because, you know, a lot of times when you encounter people who are homeless, they tend to be very angry. They tend to have this outward appearance of, you know, kind of either mental illness or drug abuse that tends to be, I think, over
Yes.
Focused on. Yeah.
It is. Because, and the reason it's over-focused on is a lot of the most of the homeless are in shelters.
Mm.
And those are the families or the people that probably don't have the mental illness. So the ones on the streets are the ones typically with those issues. And because that's about 20% of the of the homeless population. So really, that's just the ones you see. But there, but 40% of the homeless population is children. And clearly they don't have a mental, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just innocent victims in this. So
let's talk a little bit about like some of the actionable items you talk about in your book, about what we can do, what are solutions, what are pathways to solving these problems, whether it be for the people listening or for the government or city to enact some of those pathways you found.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay, great. Well,
yeah.
One of the interviews in the book is with Assemblyman Andrew Hevesy, and I'm a huge supporter of a plan that he has. It's the first comprehensive preventative homelessness plan. It's called Home Stability Support. It's a rent subsidy for up to five years. You have to be employed, and then the government will pay a certain amount of your rent so that you can stay in your home, which actually would save the government 30% of what they're already spending on homelessness, and then that 30% could be used toward existing homelessness. So I just interviewed Hevesy again. I'm working on the second edition, and our second interview is geared toward his bills to help with domestic violence, which is a very important. His bills for domestic violence also really need to be passed because that will literally prevent homelessness as well. So he's hoping that it's supported in the House and the Senate. So he's got the support, and he's really hoping that Home Stability Support, HSS, will be put into the budget for this year. So I definitely want to support that. A bill that has been passed and will help with catering for the homeless is Senator Joseph Addabbo's bill. He has a food law that was passed that for food waste that all schools in New York State from the pre-K to the university level are legally required to give their food to nonprofits that can distribute it to whoever needs it and compost the rest of what they can't give organically. So that is still working to be implemented because the schools have concerns about giving. But I just met with him last week, and he's working with the DOE and the chancellor to try to alleviate the school's concerns. Because just the schools in New York City, if they gave their food, I mean, that would feed millions right there, you know, on a regular basis. So then also the bills like Brian Barnwell and Senator Gianaris have a bill about affordable housing. And so right now affordable housing is gauged by median incomes from the wealthiest communities, Westchester County, you know, highest levels of income in Manhattan. So their bill would be that affordable housing would be gauged by the median income by neighborhood, by zip code. So it's literally what, you know, Forest Hills has a zip code that might be higher than, say, Jackson Heights. But right now, affordable housing isn't even affordable. So those are some bills that I support. And then as individuals, I have a few chapters on what we can do to help people that are victims of domestic violence or the homeless. But I really think the number one thing that we can do, that everybody can do, is just to show respect.
Yeah.
And just to look at them and engage in them because, you know, these are people just like you and me that have simply fallen on hard times. And everyone deserves that respect and compassion because they're really going through so much struggle. So I give them all the respect in the world for what they're going through, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it seems like you have a very strong compass, a moral compass. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the guiding philosophies that guide you through this and help you show that respect, show that compassion that you seem to be showing? Part of the themes of the show have to do with personal truth and how letting empower us.
Yeah.
And giving that empowerment to others, yeah.
Yes. Definitely.
So what were some of the guiding philosophies that helped you through this and helped you to find this light?
Well, I would definitely say my faith has carried me through. And I also, because of my struggles and suffering in my life, it's given me a lot of compassion. I've experienced poverty, domestic violence, and homelessness as a child and as an adult. And a precursor for experiencing those things are if it happens to you as a child. Mm. So I really felt oppressed and disempowered most of my life, and I've struggled with that. And I wanted to lift others up as I continue to pursue my goals. I don't want to leave anybody behind because I know how it feels to be at rock bottom. So that gives me the compassion. And then God, I would say, my faith has carried me through. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for my faith. Yeah. So I really feel led. I felt led throughout my life, and that my life would be so much worse if not for that. So.
And in the book, you talk about success stories of people who there's about, I think, 30 or 40, more than that. 77
mm-hmm.
people who have been famous people who have been homeless at some point, or severe poverty,
yes.
to be homeless, mm-hmm. Celebrities who went from rags to riches. Tell us a little bit about kind of how you researched that and how the journeys of some of these people. You can spotlight some of these people, yeah.
Yes, and in the second edition, I'm going to have probably 100 celebrities.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I could have done even more. It's because I researched just that one chapter. I probably had 30 sources, and I do cite my sources in the book because I have over 200. But it really, to me, was inspiring, and a lot of people have told me that that was an inspiring chapter because people look up to celebrities, but really it's just people like you and me. Mm. And a lot of them, a lot of the common denominator I found was a lot of them right before they got their big break. Mm. They were at rock bottom, which I thought was really interesting, you know. And homelessness also, it can be a few days, or if it's a length of time, that's chronic homelessness, or if it happens over and over, that's chronic homelessness. Mm. That was really eye-opening to a lot of people that this can happen to anybody, because I think the faces of homelessness people need to see. They're just regular people, you know, that like, so we need to see that, and at seeing it in the celebrities helps people to see it on the person on the street, you know?
Yeah, you never know. And the point is, I think the inspiration to that is that, you know, even if the people that are neighbors are hitting rock bottom, that there's always that potentiality of something, of them arising and really being a contributing member
of course.
Of society. So we shouldn't forget these these neighbors. So now tell us a little bit more about, you know, you've written several books. Tell us go through a little bit of your other writings and all these kinds of things. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Where the Shadows Meet the Light is actually the first book that I completed. Mm-hmm. This book I've carried with me throughout my life because I was always just interested in religion, history, culture, science. So I was always studying, you know, life. Since I was in elementary school. And at first I didn't even know why. I really found these issues fascinating and cultures. I love to study other people's cultures and see the unity in all of us. The beginning of this story came to me, like just the character and kind of a vision of this. And then I started writing it. I began writing this book in elementary school, and then the experiences in my life and all the research came out in this, which is a series. It's called the Creation Series. Mm. So there's a lot of religious and multicultural undertones to this. Something else that makes it very unique in a literary sense is that it moves and shifts from each character's perspective. Because the second book in the series is like a quest for the characters. This is an epic fantasy with science fiction elements. Mm. So the second book, each character has a chapter where they go on a quest. It's similar to Dante's Inferno, but way more. So they go into the universe, past, present, future, heaven, hell, purgatory. It's very it's very different. And then, so then for the first book, which I've rewritten, of course, many times, I decided to carry that through all of the books and to have it, have each character have a perspective, have their, even if the character's only in the book for one scene, you get their perspective. And I think it's really eye-opening to see how people can misunderstand each other, to see the vastly different perspectives. So I think that really helps us to be united when we see the differences, and we but yet we also see the commonality. So that's one of the like dreams of my life or hopes for my life, is for people to come together as much as we can, no matter how different we are. We're all humans. Yeah. You know?
So you tell us a little about the themes, but why don't you tease the plot a little bit? Or
sure. Yeah. And well, actually, it's not all humans. In the book, so the plot of it is there's a lot that happens, but these 14 characters come together for the greater good to defeat a dictator who's taking over different countries, and so they need to come together. Now, the prophecy is prophecy-based, where each character has some sort of birthmark, tattoo, quote-unquote, that they're born with, a symbol or an animal. The main character has a stallion tattoo. There's another girl with a raven tattoo. So they all differ. Some have even a symbol, like the symbol of unity. So they come, they're coming together in book one. And then you're just getting their perspectives, learning about them. At one point, they get captured. So there's also a lot of action, you know, like swords play and magic. One of the main characters is actually called Wandering Wolf, because my last name is Wolf, but he's a shaman. So there's different religions, different creatures. And I also, like, there's a unicorn, but he was cursed because he's black with a silver horn.
Uh-huh.
And then there's Celestria. She's the Bird of Eden. There was two Bird of Edens, but a Celestria and a Story. But a Story was killed. So there's all these backstories, and it kind of can go back and forth to the future, past, and present, which really, that's how life is, if you think about it.
Yeah, interesting. So, interesting. Yeah.
So,
and also, you wrote two collections of poetry or one collection?
One so far, but I'll have more.
The Resurrected Dream, a collection of poetry and prose. An awakened soul. So we'll give you a moment to either read a selection from The Resurrected Dream, or you'd like to read a selection from that? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I'll read A Ship Is Safe in Harbor. I'll read an excerpt from that.
Yeah.
A ship is safe in harbor, but that isn't what it was built for. A bird is safe in a cage, but that isn't what it was born for. A ship was built to sail, and a bird was born to fly. And each of us has a calling to accomplish before we die. Fish are made to swim, deer are meant to leap and bound. By accepting each other's natures, the way to peace is found. Some of us need to see the world. We're created to do extraordinary things. Some of us hold a vision that only through the eyes of faith is seen. The scorpions will sting us, and lions roar their pain. The gentle lambs whine meekly, the cowardly love in vain. To each their own, live and let live, but never let die. Whatever you were born to do, whoever you were born to be and do and live the life. Walk out on faith, unsafe, to become worthy of the dream.
Thank you.
Very nice. That kind of embodies who I am too, you know.
I definitely feel like that there's like a deep calling for you to serve and to help the community, and also to promote this higher calling to the community, so then people will be able to understand that there's, you know, this is the play of lightness, the play of light.
Yes.
Know? Yeah.
I want to bring like where the shadows meet the light. I'm called to bring the darkness into the light.
Yeah.
And expose the truth. And compassion, I think, is, and empathy is really critical to bring to these issues, because like the blame game doesn't help anyone. And I think people blame to make themselves feel alleviated of the responsibility, but I feel we all have a responsibility to each other.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's so difficult sometimes, like, in daily life, we get caught up in this, the game of work, the game of our lives and embodying our lives and being able to remember that our higher calling is our obligation to society, our obligation to some higher authority, you know?
Yes,
and
definitely.
How do you navigate that? How are you able to navigate
that? Well, that's that's the difficulty, isn't it? Because I came to New York City wanting definitely to help the homeless, but I also have my own dreams, and that's where it's harder for me to find a balance. Because I'm I'm studying archetypes right now, and I'm like the creator and the caretaker. Yeah. So I'm trying to balance that because I like the creation series. I am very creative. I have all these talents in different areas, but I also have a deep heart for people that are suffering.
Yeah.
So that is my challenge, I think, in my life. My soul's challenge is to balance service with also my creativity. And it's hard too because I see things so differently than other people in my creative talents. Like I'm not me. Mm. I'm not egotistical. I'm really talented and I want to use my talent to benefit people as well. You know, like I'm a singer, so I want to use my singing to, you know, open people's eyes and heal people. So it's not like my creativity is shallow either, but unfortunately in those fields it tends to attract people that is performers.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I come from a family of talented people, so it's more about who I am and how I want to use my gifts to benefit society as well. But like the service is kind of like the direct way to help people. So I'm challenged with that balance. Yeah.
Yeah. And what were some of the artifacts, whether it be books or movies or music, growing up that really influenced you, and how has that evolved over the years? Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's many.
Yeah.
Okay. I think a great film that was eye-opening to me, one of the greatest films, is American History X.
Yeah, it's a great
It's
one.
Really
yeah.
great about yeah. prejudice, because I don't believe in any prejudice. I've never believed in that or had any feelings toward that, because it's like, well, it doesn't make sense to me, but that makes sense. It made sense how it happened.
Yeah.
It kind of shows how prejudice can get started and germinate in a family. So then Frankie Peretti as an author was inspirational to me. I think he's the best known author for spirituality. Mm. He wrote about spiritual warfare, and particularly in New York City, I think we face that on a daily basis, good versus evil. And I have to fight the good fight, and how to do that and how you can get manipulated and tempted and things. So then Victor Hugo really influenced me with his complexity of characters. I think he's the best author for complexity of characters. So C.S. Lewis, I was influenced by him.
For me too, Screwtape Letters.
Yes.
The Problem of Pain.
Always. Yes. Yeah. Oh, so good. Mere Christianity. Yeah. Screwtape Letters. Oh, excellent. Yeah. So that's kind of a lot of how my writing is, because as my series develops, it gets more into spiritual warfare.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about spiritual warfare.
Okay.
Some of the misconceptions, I think, about spiritual warfare and clarifying for the audience and listeners, you know, a lot of times we think of it as an external, you know, warfare, but it's actually internal.
Yes.
You know, it's very much about the thought forms and battling delusions, battling evil within our minds. Talk a little bit about what your understanding of that is. Yeah.
Okay. Well, a lot of it is, and that really the greatest battle we face is within ourselves and within our own minds. And we have to take responsibility for that, because no matter who told you what, we can choose what we believe. I mean, one of the homeless ladies, chapter one from Our Invisible Neighbors, my friend Jerry, and she's now in her late 60s, and her father told her she was stupid and she can't and get it out of her head. So I'm trying to feed her self-esteem and say, you're smart, you can learn, you can grow, but ultimately it's up to each one of us to decide, am I going to listen to my father or whomever told me I was stupid, or am I going to prove them wrong? And that's one way, one aspect of spiritual warfare is fighting those voices in our head, self-doubt, anxiety, worry, fear. Yeah. Those are all big, you know, spiritual warfare that we have to struggle with, and we and keep going forward and choose faith over fear, and choose and not the more that we feed the positivity, the more that grows. And we're going to, and we'll struggle with that till the day we die as humans. That's the human condition.
Yeah, it seems to me that, you know, these thought forms, these viral thoughts coming to us, we're constantly feeding into them. And we have to choose. We have to give our attention. Yes. We have to choose our where we place our attention, where we place our training of the mind, you know, to train to always be on the right path, to move towards the training and all these kind of things. So what are some of the practices you engage in that help you with that prayer, I guess, or
I have a lot of tools, meditation, prayer, and it also I think empowers me to empower myself. Like the more positive I can put out, like in the book, is it was important to educate myself on the causes. I interviewed a lot of the homeless. I wanted to really understand how this happened. But then a very important aspect to me is the third part of the book, which is the solutions.
Yeah.
And their solutions are there for homelessness, for the epidemics like homelessness, and also for you and me, whatever problems that we face, we do have solutions for. Every problem does have a solution. So it helps me. Action helps me. And of course, being, you have to be in a state of being and allowing to accept the good into your life. So I study a lot, and I always have. I've always, you know, books are a great tool for me. Books on tape, prayer, meditation. I do go to church. So the more that I can feed my spirit, the stronger that I am in holistically. Because I think we also need to look at our problems holistically, because our physical ailments is a reflection of our internal struggles. Emotion, psychology, it all goes into the physical body, which of course cultures, like Eastern cultures, have known this for thousands of years.
Yeah.
But somehow the Western culture has lost it, which it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
You know,
as technology, I think, starts to advance, we start to lose touch with the ancient wisdom.
Exactly. Bless you.
And also, like, you know, they have this idea of as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I tend to think of it as within, so without. You know?
Oh, I like that.
That. You know, what's within us, within our internal climate or internal mind, we see outside of us, you know?
Exactly.
And what are your thoughts on kind of the connection between, you were touching a little bit on this, about the connection between our internal mind, our internal climate, and what we see outside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, you see solutions, you see problems and solutions, whereas many people just see quagmires of problems, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they and I think the majority focuses on the problem, but they don't want us to take responsibility for what they can do. And if they did, it would be very empowering because the people that are happiest are the people that are doing positive things. And they're like, maybe I can't solve everything, but I can do what I can do. Like Helen Keller, I think it was, with the quote, I might not be able to help everybody, but I'm not going to let that stop me from helping the person that I can help.
Yeah.
And I think that really helps us to be empowered. And it really is the battle. I agree with you. From within. That's a great quote.
Thank you. So now let's talk a little bit about kind of the important disciplines for yourself and that you can teach others. Now, basically, that was the question that has to do with how you're able to communicate all these into through your literature or through other means. How you're able to teach a discipline to other people, and how has that been successful, or what obstacles have you had in that?
A spiritual discipline?
Or any kind of discipline.
Okay.
You can take it as any way you want, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. I definitely have a teacher aspect of me, and I'm always looking to see how I can help other people, small or large. Like my one friend from the book, you know, I was able to help her find housing, and it took a lot of aspects of work, self-esteem. You know, I was always trying to lift her spirits. And then also I helped her with computer skills. And then I helped her with resume building, references, apartment hunting. So I was able to help one person really come from the beginning of the journey at rock bottom to being stabilized. But everybody's at a different level. And I feel like everybody that comes into our life, we can learn from, and we can also teach. So I try to have a humble and flexible spirit to always be learning, but then also see if I can add to the conversation in order to open someone's mind, because I feel like I learn with every conversation. I'm learning something, and hopefully I'm able to impart the knowledge that I've, you know, gleaned, and hopefully wisdom from all the studies and experiences I've had. So I'm always looking to do that. I definitely am able a lot of times to see where people are insecure. Whereas some people might try to take advantage of that, I try to encourage that person and lift them up where they need to be lifted up, because we all have insecurities. We all have things we struggle with. So I try to be an encourager, and then teach people the knowledge. Like, one of the chapters in the book is poverty thinking, and it's a mindset, and it's generational a lot of times. Of course, you know, education can help, but most of all, it's from your mind.
Yeah, one of the major themes we've done on the show is about abundance thinking.
Yes. Like
thinking in abundance, not thinking in terms of poverty, not thinking that I don't have, but thinking about focusing on what we do have and amplifying that and understanding that. So is that also part of your philosophy of abundance thinking?
Absolutely. Yeah, positive thinking, abundance thinking. Yeah, and we've got to get ourselves physically and mentally and emotionally to where we want to be in order to get there. And it's a lot of work. It's doing and being. You have to have the combination, because you can't be like, well, these are my goals, but you still have to have steps to get there. But you also have to be in that frame of mind to order to, one, accept it, and two, really step into it authentically. So I absolutely agree.
Yeah, I really liked in your pre-interview questions, you talked about there will never be another you or me, that every person has priceless value. And I think society's lost the value of people in general. So if you talk a little bit more about that, and how under the question about what's misguided about society and what's the problem about problems with society. Yeah,
yeah, I think technology is a good thing overall, but anything can be used for good or bad. And I think it's disconnected us, and I think people have lost respect and value. And scientifically, our DNA, like, there will never be someone like you in the history of time again. Not your DNA, for one, and two, your experiences, because, you know, so we're all completely unique. We all have completely different DNA and completely different experiences, and that shouldn't be something to fear. A lot of people, for some reason, when they see differences, it makes them afraid. But then I think as you evolve, you find that interesting and exciting, and like, what can I learn from this person, or what can I enjoy about this culture that's different than mine? It's not something to fear. It's something to celebrate. Yeah. To celebrate, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that when we recognize that the position we're in and the role we're playing in society is unique, as you're saying, that it's specific to us, that we then can be empowered to act from that place of true authenticness, and move within our communities, move these centers, these hubs of communities, and become a real motivating change. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think communities, I think we need to come together and not work separately. I think the more that people come together, the more great things get done. Because, like, independently, Andrew Hevesy has this great bill. But if he doesn't do the work and have the skills to get other people on board, it won't get passed. And he does a great job because he works with Democrats and Republicans. And I think the political divisiveness isn't helping anybody. And I don't like the label. Like George Washington said, if we have party titles, we're going to destroy this country. And I think people get bogged down in Republican versus Democrat. But if they just looked at the issues, we agree more than we disagree.
Yeah, I definitely get the sense from you and what you were saying previously, when you were talking about American History X and such, the tribalism is a big problem for you, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, we think tribalism, yeah.
It really is. Yeah. And I'm from Indiana, and I really never liked that. I call it small town mentality.
Yeah.
And in New York, I was, and now I've lived over all over the country, and it's disappointing to find, I think that's just the human problem,
because
New York is very much like, this is my neighborhood, and I'm
blind allegiance to that neighborhood.
Exactly.
No matter what problems that neighborhood has, you're going out to
that's my neighborhood, and that's your district. I don't care about your, and I'm very much global mentality. If I can help someone in Finland, I'll help them. If I can help someone in my neighborhood, I'll help them. I don't care. Like, we're humans. Like when you look at a map of the earth, you don't see lines. You don't see districts. You know what I mean? So I think we need to start looking at things in a global sense. The more that we can see the global community, the more issues will be solved. And if we can, instead of looking at labels and slinging mud at each other, if we can just look at the causes, figure out the solution, implement the solution, then the world will be so much better, right? Can't we all just get along? That's one of my mottos.
Yeah, it seems like the solutions are right there, but we obstinately don't want to reach for that glass of water when we're thirsty. You know,
exactly.
We obstinately want to go for something else and constantly feel that, you know, that striving for it. And the problem seems to constantly exist in our minds, you know,
creating the problems in a way too. We're not, and so the solutions are there, and it's like, let's, like you say, focus on the positive, focus on the solutions, focus on what you have versus what you don't have, and that's going to attract more abundance in your life. So I'm totally on the same page. And politically, I just feel like, you know, there's so many epidemics and issues right now that are really important. And this is the critical time for us to come together.
Yeah, not only tribalism in the sense of, you know, our communities, our parties, our families, all the blind allegiance to, but also ideologically, that we become so blinded by what we perceive to be, not even the truth of the ideology, what we perceive to be the ideology, not having faith in the power of that truth to come through, but rather blind dogma and all this kind of thing tends to blind us to the reality.
It's a fanaticism. It's and people are, I mean, loyal, like anything that's good can become bad if taken to the extreme. So loyalty, of course, is good, but when you're loyal to someone that isn't even exhibiting what you stand for in your party, that doesn't make sense, and that becomes a dictatorship, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like being able to see the reality in front of us is so important, and being able to see the bring the light in so we can see clearly what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah, and people, I feel so many people are followers with the sheep mentality that they're just like, well, this is what, I mean, Rush Limbaugh said, you know, like literally people from where I come from will be like, well, my friend said that Rush Limbaugh said this.
Yeah.
And it's like gospel.
Yeah.
And it's, and you know, referring to a speech or something, I'm like, well, did you see the speech? did you read the speech? Did you check your sources? How many sources did you look at? And people are mentally, in some ways, kind of complacent.
Yeah.
And not really, like, because we all have to be educated, because the reality is we're all ignorant. I mean, I've studied so many sources, and I'm sure I still could learn so much more.
Yeah, for me,
you know,
for me also, like, the key for it, for me at least, is, you know, I grew up, I went to Catholic school from first to eighth grade.
Oh, wow.
And I had a little exposure to Catholicism and Christianity by proxy, obviously, but generally. And then one thing I understood from that is that the God consciousness or Christ consciousness comes through the Holy Spirit. And that, you know, that we have to really embody the living truth, that this truth will then kind of have its own, just like in any kind of logical consequence, you know, premise and then consequence, go logically, you know, when the truth is alive within you, you don't have to refer to dogma, you don't have to refer to text, you can just let it breathe in you.
Exactly.
And be in that space. Yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a relationship.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And it's a daily walk. I mean, every day. It's like you take a shower every day, so why don't you feed your spirit every day? It's the same thing. And like you have to invite the spirit in because part of that love is free will. So we can choose, like you say, we can choose whatever we want, but if we choose to let the spirit lead us, that's when miracles happen in our lives.
Yeah. It's so easy to get led astray by what we perceive other people's opinions or thoughts or actions. We don't even know what their real inside is. We're blind to their intentions and we can only see their actions and their words. But then we get led astray and we want to constantly get back to that moral compass, that moral compass that'll guide us through.
And judgment keeps us separated. Like if you're just judging someone based on appearance, then that's wrong. Like they say, you know, if you assume, you know, it's always wrong to assume, even if you're right. You know what I mean? So I think it's important, like you're saying, to not be judging others, but to just be open to getting to know them and to be as much as we can be unbiased.
Exactly. And why we talk, one of the major themes of the show is also is the personal is political, and how, and we're getting into this a little bit, this topic in this conversation, but what is your understanding of that phrase, and how does that, the personal choices become a charged political stance, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Well, in a way, I love that phrase, but because in a way, everything is personal and everything is political.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Because, and that's where I think I wish, I don't like to say victims, I like to say innocents, because I don't like the connotation, but innocent people that have gone through something, a lot of times, understandably so, but they get bogged down in that trauma.
Yeah.
But where we need to come as our souls evolve is what can we do to help the next person, to help the next generation. And so the things that I've experienced, the suffering, the struggles, the traumas, makes me want to help others. And the best way to help others, really, on a mass level, is through politics, is through laws. And it's really exciting to me because so many people are like, oh, this is such a bad time and the government this and that. But some of the best politicians I ever knew are right here among us, really, really doing their job and doing great work. Because like when I was in college, I found out about the sex trafficking that's going on from upstate New York, Syracuse to New York City. It's really an epidemic. And I was like praying, God, you know, we really need a politician to do something about this. I can write newspaper articles and I can volunteer, but we need the laws to change. We need this to come to the light. And Assemblyman Hevesy is fighting this. Mm. So he's like literally an answer to my prayer. And there's so many politicians that are really have the bills, you know, that are in place to get passed that can affect change. And it's very personal to me. These issues are very personal to me. And helping somebody to not go through what I've gone through is very important and personal. And it's also very political.
Yeah, exactly. I think what I'm hearing from that also is that, you know, it's so easy to think that we're not part of the community, we're some kind of island.
Yeah.
That, you know, we're just, you know, like, it only happened to me.
Yeah.
But actually, it happens to many people.
Yes.
All the things we go through are repeated over and over again in all of our communities. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to recognize that we're interconnected.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that as we, because I think part of the, like we were talking about spiritual warfare, isolation.
Mm.
That's the natural inclination when you've been traumatized, for instance, you want to isolate. People like veterans with PTSD, they isolate. They go to drugs, you know, or alcohol to cope. But the best thing we can do is to reach out, look out, become a part of the solution, become a part of the community, become a part of the conversation to affect change.
And that's
what we all have a responsibility. And like domestic violence is the biggest epidemic in the world. It's like homelessness and domestic violence are my two biggest causes, because these issues affect people for the rest of their lives. And so we need to be thinking about how we can really prevent this and solve this to help people to not have to go through this. Like, literally, like, I there's a great quote I just saw, like, leadership is not about the next election, it's about the next generation.
Exactly. Yeah. And also just to be able to recognize that when we talk about speaking truth to power, we're talking really about empowering ourselves. That there's no external, you know, these people have power, we don't have power. No, we all have power.
Yeah,
we
do.
We all have the power to change. And
we do. And when you heal yourself, that helps others. Just becoming empowered, you know, we literally do need to become the change we want to see. Like Gandhi said, he's my favorite leader of all time. I love Gandhi. And he really embodies that to me. Be the change you want to see.
Yeah.
So, and then as we change, it really does change our world. And it really does change and better the people around us as well.
Thank you. So as we start to wind down, any closing thoughts you want to direct people to? Your website?
Yes.
Give a reminder about the website?
Yes.
Any final action thoughts? Yeah.
Okay, sure. And I do want to just mention I have some events coming up. So I am going to be doing a fundraiser with Avon, through Avon. It'll be on my website February 21st to March 21st. Then I'm going to be speaking at an advocacy and action conference. There's going to be advocates from all over the country. That's March 14th. I have several author talks coming up, and you can all see these events on my website at www.cateringforthehomeless.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So this has been the Truth to Power Show on Ready for Brooklyn. Ready for Brooklyn is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. So to help support our mission, we invite you to make a one-time donation or monthly pledge at readyforbrooklyn.org/donate. Every cent helps us continue to stay on air. So please support independent community media by pledging whatever you can afford. All contributions are tax-deductible to the full extent of the law. Also, tonight is February 11th. We're having a special event at 12 Grattan Street, Brooklyn, at the Pine Box Rock Shop. Join us for a night of comedy and storytelling as comedians perform material informed from their experience of sexual assault. Find out for yourself come to Asking For It, presented by Ready for Brooklyn, this Monday, February 11th, 9 p.m., and have a catharsis with comedians, some very famous comedians, this Monday at 9 p.m. at February 11th on Pine Box Rock Shop for some good consensual fun. Also, if you're listening to the Ready for Brooklyn on your computer, free yourself up with the apps on iPhone and Android by going to readyforbrooklyn.org/iPhone or /Android. So thank you so much, Crystal, for being here.
Yes, and thank you. I want to thank you for having me. I really appreciate this. Thank you so much. Great show.
Thank you. So we'll be closing out with the song Thunder by Imagine Dragons. Let me just get this. Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follow. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder.
Classes while I was scheming for the masses. Who do you think you are? Dreaming about being a big star. They say you're basic, they say you're easy. You're always riding in the backseat. Now I'm smiling from the stage while you were clapping in the nosebleeds.
Thunder. thunder, lightning and the thunder, 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 feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder, 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 feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder.
Famous Dead People. Famous Dead People.
Famous Dead People is a comedy show.